ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। संवादयन्ति यत् कामा स्वराजपरिभाविताः दुर्लभनापि सिद्धानं मुकुन्दं हृदि पश्यतः। संवादयन्ति increase happiness yat because kamaha such aspirations swarajya situated in his own constitutional position of rendering service to the Lord paribhavitaha saturated with such aspirations durlabaha very rarely obtained na not api also siddhanam of the great mystics mukundam krishna the supreme personality of godhead hridhi within the core of the heart pashyataha person's always accustomed to seeing him Prabhupada's translation those who are situated with the transcendental happiness of those who are saturated thank you Prabhu those who are saturated with transcendental happiness of rendering service to the supreme personality of godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics for such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of krishna within the core of his heart again those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness of rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics for such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart Srila Prabhupada's purport a pure devotee is uninterested not only in elevation to the higher planetary systems, but even in the perfections of mystic yoga. Real perfection is devotional service. The happiness derived from merging in the impersonal Brahman and the happiness derived from the eight perfections of mystic yoga, anima, laghima, prapti, and so on, they do not give any pleasure to the devotee, as stated by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, Kaivalyam Narakayate Tridashapur Akasha Pushpayate Durdantendriya Kala Sarpa Patali Prokhata Dangstrayate Vishvampurna Sukayate Vidhi Mahendradis Cha Kitayate Yat Karunya Kataksha Vaibhavavatam Tam Gauram Evastumaha Chaitanya Chandramrita, number 5. When devotees achieve the position of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he thinks the impersonal Brahman to be no better than hell. And he regards material happiness in the heavenly planets to be will-o'-the-wisp. As far as the perfection of mystic powers is concerned, a devotee compares it to a venomous snake with no teeth. A mystic yogi is especially concerned with controlling the senses. But because the senses of a devotee are engaged in the service of the Lord, Rishikena Rishikesha, Sevanam Bhaktir Uchate, there is no need for separate control of the senses. For those who are materially engaged, control of the senses is required. But the devotee's senses are all engaged in the service of the Lord, which means that they are already controlled. Parang dristva nivartate, Bhagavad Gita 2:59. A devotee's senses are not attracted by material enjoyment. And even though the material world is full of misery, the devotee considers the material world to be also spiritual, considers this material world to be also spiritual, because everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. The difference between the material and spiritual world, the difference between the spiritual world and the material world, is the mentality of service. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktang Vairagyam Uchate. When there is no mentality of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's activities are material. Prapanchi Kataya Budhya Hari Sambandhi Vastunaha Mumukshi Bhi Parityago Vairagyam Palgu Katyate. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1:2:256. That which is not engaged in the service of the Lord is material. And nothing thus engaged should be given up. In the construction of a high skyscraper and the construction of a temple, there may be the same enthusiasm, but the endeavors are different. For one is material and the other is spiritual. Spiritual activities should not be confused with material activities and given up. Nothing connected with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is material. A devotee who considers all this is always situated in spiritual activities, and therefore he is no longer attracted by material activities. Param drishtva nivartate. Srila Prabhupada ki. Very happy to be in Vrindavan. I always feel like I'm coming home when I come to Vrindavan. I feel like the deities here are my Ishtadevs, and even though I serve half a planet away in Southern California most of the year, I feel like these deities and the deities of Mayapur are my home deities. When I come here, I always feel like I'm coming back home. There's some illustrious Vaishnavas present, and so I'm humbled speaking in front of you. Hare Krishna. I've noticed over the years there's some different things that occur in Prabhupada's purports. One of the big realizations I had in 1993 when Burijan Prabhu's book Surrender Unto Me came out, which was kind of it was a big deal. Nobody had published their own Gita at that time. And there was a big hoopla. There was a big hue and cry. It was inappropriate, perhaps, for him to do so. He spent a lot of time in his introduction explaining his position, giving an apologia of sorts, a systematic defense of why it was appropriate for him to publish the book. I remember when I got the book. I'd been a devotee for about 5 years. And up until that point, I'm somewhat ashamed to admit, but I had just read Prabhupada's books without realizing that each purport was connected to each verse. I read the purports almost as an independent occurrence. So there was a verse which you would read, you get some meaning out of the verse, and it was Prabhupada's purport where he would preach to you. But the verse and the purport, in my mind, were not really connected per se. And when I read Burijan's book, I realized for the first time in my life, I was, I think, 19 or 20 at the time, I realized for the first time in my life that each purport was connected to each verse. And it was nothing short of an epiphany, a eureka experience. Of course, so many devotees have published their Gita since then. So many Prabhupada's disciples have published their Gita, and they have so many amazing angles of vision. Prabhupada himself spoke about retranslating the Gita and doing another Bhagavad Gita in 1977. He said we could do so many Gitas. He himself wanted to do another Gita. Anyway, in Prabhupada's purports, I've noticed he does a few different things. Sometimes he'll take a dig at materialists. Sometimes he'll give a plug for the Hare Krishna movement. Sometimes he'll double translate words in the Sanskrit. He'll translate them one way in the translation. He'll give another version in the purport, because sometimes there's different possible translations. A lot of times he'll troubleshoot potential misunderstandings which might occur from reading the verse. Sometimes he'll skip translating something in the verse because it's problematic enough, and then he'll treat it elaborately in the purport, where he has like a lot of control over explaining the meaning. There's a few different things he does. A lot of times, as a class giver, I find it's important to give a lot of context. And so maybe I would start by explaining the ninth canto as Isha Katha, as talks about God, from the Bhagavatam's own analysis of its 10 subject matters. Sometimes you might use the Purana's version of the Bhagavatam as the body of Krishna, and think of the ninth canto as the throat leading up to the shining face of Krishna in the 10th canto. You're warming up with Ram Leela. Sometimes I might give the context of the chapter, the surrounding verses, and this verse occurs as a couplet with the preceding verse, and it's actually somewhat important for understanding it. But sometimes you get a verse and a purport which are quite thick and complete in and of themselves, and they really represent a full teaching, even separate from the context. I think that such a thing has occurred here. This is like Prabhupada quotes five different verses in the purport. One of them he quotes twice, and it's many paragraphs long, and he's got a real angle of vision. He's got a real idea about what he wants to communicate. So what I thought I would do with the time we have is I would go through the purport. Normally I wouldn't even read the whole purport. I would just go line by line through the purport. But I'm in Vrindavan, and so it's a big place, and I'm a small devotee, if any devotee at all. And so I did everything normally like I would. I just sort of shortened everything and tightened it up. And now we can go through the purport again line by line. We can connect it to the verse, and we can explore it a little bit. A pure devotee is uninterested not only in elevation to the higher planetary systems, but even in the perfection of mystic yoga. So, the last verse mentioned that the devotees were uninterested in going to Svarga. And so this verse, now Prabhupada is taking it as further mentioning they're not even interested in the perfections of the siddhas. Napi siddhanam. There's other ways to render the verse. Some of the commentators translate the verse differently. But it's quite clear that Prabhupada is understanding the verse in that way. Or perhaps, because he doesn't mention it in the translation, this samvada yanti yat kama, these ever-increasing desires, like Govardhan, it kind of increasing the pleasure of Go, the cows, and the senses in the land, Govardhan, from Vard, or Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, an ever-increasing ocean of bliss. So samvarda yanti yat kama. Kama can be seen as, anyway, as a subject. The ever-increasing desires. The devotee is not interested in them. So Prabhupada could be retranslating the verse, or he could be referring to the previous verse. In either case, part of this section is pointing out that devotees are not interested in material enjoyment, and they're not even interested in mystic perfection. Jiva Goswami takes it even further. He says that devotees are not even interested in the four kinds of liberation, the four kinds of Vaishnav liberation, such as Sharsti, and Samipya, and Salokya. They're not even interested in those. And Swarupya, they're not even interested in those. Which is a very common motif, it's a very common teaching in our tradition, that devotees don't even want to go back to Vaikuntha if it involves giving up their love and their service to Krishna, even in the face of spiritual benedictions. And the classic example in that regard, of course, is Daruka, who felt ecstasy while fanning Krishna and was disturbed by that ecstasy because it crippled or disturbed or made more difficult his service to Krishna. You see Srila Prabhupada sometimes when he would give class. Sometimes he'd become choked up with emotion. And he would very quickly, in almost all instances, bring himself under control because he had a class to give. Very, very rarely, just a couple of times, Mayapur and in Surat, a couple of other places, Prabhupada fell into a kind of ashta sattvic vikar kind of situation and was unable to speak. But for the most part, Prabhupada was able to bring his ecstasy under control to complete the service. And this is very much the typical mood of a pure devotee. So the pure devotee is understood only, not only in the elevation of the higher planetary systems, but even in the perfections of mystic yoga. Real perfection is devotional service. Prabhupada oftentimes in his purports, not often, but occasionally in his purports, Prabhupada will include a little soundbite which is so beautiful that you could practically put it on a t-shirt. Two of them occur in this verse. Here's the first one. Real perfection is devotional service. It's almost like a sutra. You could do a Bhakti Vedanta Sutra, and this could be one of them. Real perfection is devotional service. You spend the rest of your life meditating on the meaning of that, plumbing the depths of it, mining it for jewels, and your life would be well spent. Prabhupada is preaching here. It's very much in consonance with what the Bhagavatam is saying. The Bhagavatam is saying that Ambarish Maharaja's citizens were so advanced due to, and this is something Prabhupada doesn't mention in the purport, due to their association with Maharaja Ambarish, due to their association with the great Vaishnava, they became such great Vaishnavas. You could also, that the whole purport could have been dedicated to this point as well. Prabhupada didn't go in that direction. He will in other places in this chapter. But in this purport, he doesn't choose to. We won't spend much time on it. But the whole purport could be spent explaining how, because of the association of a Vaishnava, these people also became devotees. These people also became perfect, such as the power. Prabhupada wrote a purport called Vrindavan Bhajan in 1959, just after taking sannyas. And he said in that place, he said, one madhyam, Bhagavat, can save the whole world. Not even an Uttam Bhagavat, just a middle devotee. One Madhyam Bhagavat can save the whole world. He was critiquing that a Padre Sahib, a Catholic minister, had come to Vrindavan and was criticizing Krishna for being licentious, for dancing with gopis. But none of the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan could defeat him. Prabhupada was lamenting this in his English poem. And he was saying how one Madhyam Bhagavat, he actually quotes the Madhurya Kadambini. It's the only place in all of Prabhupada's teachings where he directly quotes the Madhurya Kadambini by Vishwanath Chakravarti, such a beloved book of the Vaishnavas. And Prabhupada was clearly intimately familiar with it because he references it as the Kadambini. References it as to people who already must have known its meaning. So the whole purport could be spent explaining, the whole purport could be spent exploring this. But these devotees had become so advanced that they weren't interested in Svarga, which this idea of a material heaven almost does not exist in Western theology. They have a dualistic system of the material world and the spiritual world, or the material world and heaven, but this tripartite idea where there's a material world and then there's a material heavenly abode where you go and enjoy and then there's a spiritual world, that idea doesn't exist. Just like actually in the West there's also Cartesian dualism, it's kind of a standard model. There's the body and then there's you. But the idea that there's a body and there's a mind and then there's a you, also a tripartite idea, very standard in Indic thought, that also doesn't really exist in the West. They have a phenomenal and a numinous world. These terms come from René Descartes, and they've influenced most of Western transcendental philosophy. And so, anyway, we can, for this purpose, if you want to understand this in real practical terms, Because at least for myself, I didn't grow up thinking of going to Svarg. I didn't grow up with that idea. Maybe you Vaishnavas did. I didn't grow up with such an idea. But what really occurs in Svarg as it's explained in Vedic literatures is there's a lot of enjoyment. I certainly grew up with the idea of increasing enjoyment with samvardayanti kama. I certainly grew up with that idea. That idea is familiar to me. Quite familiar to me. And so what's really being said here is that devotees associated with Ambarish, all of his citizens, were uninterested in any kind of material enjoyment, even in what would normally be considered to be great spiritual achievement. The four kinds of Vaishnava liberation, the perfections of mystic yoga, etc. Even liberation. Prabhupada includes liberation in this equation, as you'll see in a moment. Pure devotees uninterested, not only in elevation of the higher planetary systems, but even in the perfections of mystic yoga, real perfection is devotional service. The happiness derived from merging in the impersonal Brahman. The happiness derived from Sayuja Mukti. The happiness derived from what most people think of when they think of Mukti or Moksha. The happiness derived from becoming one with God. And the happiness derived from the eight perfections of mystic yoga. Anima, Lagima, Prapti, and so on. They don't give any pleasure to the devotee. This verse, this purport can be seen as descriptive. It's describing a pure devotee. It can also be seen as prescriptive. It can also be seen as telling us the gold standard. Not even the gold standard, the benchmark, the typical appropriate standard to be considered to be a devotee. If you take it that way, at least for me, it really indicates I have some distance to traverse in my path back to Godhead. Not only do I need to give up any kind of pleasure from material enjoyment, I also have to even give up things which would normally be considered to be like kind of beyond the ken of what I might even be able to experience. Mystic perfections, the four kinds of Vaishnava liberation, impersonal liberation. It sets a real high bar for the standard of devotional service, for what's expected of a devotee, for the standard that was achieved by all of Ambarish Maharaj's followers, for the standard that should be achieved by all of Srila Prabhupada's followers. How we would make Srila Prabhupada proud, how we make our Gurujana proud, how we make the Purva Acharyas proud. Anima Lagima Prapti, these are the Ashta Siddhis. Anima means you make yourself Anu, very, very small. Lagima means you make yourself Lagu. Then there's Garima, you make yourself heavy, Guru. Prapti, you can attain any place you want to go, achieve any place you want to go, is normally how it's rendered by the commentator. It could also be taken as meaning that you can achieve anything you want, and so on. The Bhagavatam lists 5 siddhis and 10 upa siddhis. You get these ashta siddhis. Different commentators take some of them separately. This happens quite a bit. This happens quite a bit in our, if you take a surveil of our literature, is you'll find that in different texts these things are listed slightly differently. Something which bears mentioning. The verse says that the devotees are swaraja padibhavitaha. They are absorbed in swaraja. This is I'm like happy I'm giving class. You know, ostensibly I'm giving class in India. We're in Vrindavan, so it's not really India. If we wanted to, you know, be real clear about it, real technically clear, we're not in India, we're in the spiritual world. But swaraj, it's like a very common term in India. Gandhi, Dayananda Saraswati, they talked about swaraj, of India gaining independence to be ruling Raja, oneself, swa. You rule yourself. You're self-governed. You're self-ruled. This is like a very, very common trope in Gandhi's politics. And, of course, Prabhupada ostensibly was part of Gandhi's movement for a minute. It was called Satyagraha movement, but it was also the Swaraja movement. And the Swaraja movement was bigger than Gandhi. A lot of people in India during that period of time, kind of beginning right around 1900, even into the 1890s, 1880s, a little bit, but really fomenting in the 1920s, in the 1930s. And that movement grew along with the Indian National Army under Subhas Chandra Bose, and eventually, you know, Britain was forced, weakened by World War II, to give up its colonization of India in 1946-47. So it says they were absorbed in Swaraja and kind of their like governing themselves. And the commentators, beginning with Sridhar Swami, all the way up through Vishwanath Chakravarti, and you can see it here in Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada says they were saturated with the transcendental happiness of rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they were... So that's said. And so that's how he's rendering it. And the acharyas, they mention it's swarup sukha. The happiness of their own swarup. The happiness of realizing their own relationship with Krishna. Of their swarup. And so, happy with that. Happy in their relationship with Krishna. They're able to give up these other things. They're able to let go of these other things. So therefore, because of the happiness of Swaraja, which here is understood by all the commentators to mean Swarup Sukha, the happiness of their own Swarup with Krishna, they're not attracted by these yogic perfections, they're not attracted by material enjoyment, they're not even attracted by merging into the impersonal Brahman, which must give so much ananda, but not for the devotee. It's just as a sidebar, the famous definition of yoga. Krishna gives definitions of yoga in the Gita. He says, dukkha sam yoga viyogam yoga sangitam. It's known as yoga when you unyoga yourself from your yoga to suffering. He says, yoga karmasu koshalam. Yoga is the art of work. But Patanjali gives kind of a very famous definition of yoga. Yoga is chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga is the curbing of the vrittis, of the chitta, of the fluctuations of the consciousness. And then he says, tada drashtu swarupe vastanam. At that time, the drashtu, of the seer, of the drashta, of the seer, swarup avastanam. The drashta is situated in their swarup. So this term swarup occurs all over the place. In yoga literature, in Vedic literature. And so here, Swaraja means in your swarup you feel great happiness such that it eclipses all other happiness. And that's proven in the life of a devotee because they give up material enjoyment. We can mention here that I think it's important for devotees to acknowledge their achievements. I think it's important for devotees to acknowledge their achievements. And what I mean when I say that is, I don't want to merge in the impersonal Brahman. For a chance to achieve Krishna and Gaur, I will take birth unlimited times and keep trying. I might not be interested, or I might not have quite given up interest in material enjoyments, but I've certainly set a limitation on what I'm willing to do. I follow the four regular principles, I chant my rounds, and I faithfully serve. As do all of you. And so we might not quite be there yet, or we've given up even the attraction for material enjoyments. But certainly all of us have taken vows. Most of us have taken vows. We're following sadhana. We've given up many things to practice devotional service. And we turn away from so many material enjoyments on a regular basis. And instead we turn towards Krishna. In this way, although we might not be up to the standard which is set here, it would be false humility to say we have not walked any distance on the path of devotion. It's important that we've done that because we have to set an example for others and we have to do our Guru Jana proud. And so by practicing these things, we give them some happiness, and that's our happiness. The happiness derived from merging in the impersonal Brahman and the happiness derived from the eight mystic perfections, they do not give any pleasure to the devotee. As stated by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, in proper quotes, this famous verse from the Chaitanya Chandramrita, and he kind of paraphrases it underneath. When a devotee has achieved the position of rendering transcendental loving service through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, tam goram eva stumaha, we chant to Gaur. We chant to that Gaur. We praise that Gaur. We glorify that Gaur. Tam eva gora, that Gaur. Stumaha, we are. He's speaking in the collective here. Stumaha, we're praising that Gaur. Yat, that Gaur whose? Vaibhavam. That Gaur's glory, power, opulence is Karunikataksha, his merciful glance. His sidelong glance. Kataksha means half-opened eyes. It's kind of like, he's like, just his partial glance. Not even the full glance. Just a slight acknowledgement by that Gaur. What does it do? He thinks the impersonal Brahman to be no better than hell. Kaivalyam. This is the goal of the Yoga Sutras. Kaivalya. Which is the separation of spirit and matter according to Patanjali. Kaivalyam. Narakayate. It makes that Kaivalya into Narak, into hell. It makes that Kaivalya into Narak, into hell. He thinks the impersonal Brahman to be no better than hell. Worse than hell. At least in hell you can come back. But if you go to Brahman, it'll be so long before you come back. You're going to eternity. It'll be literally forever before you come back because you're going to eternity. You can't be happy there, but eventually, like, you may come back, but you've gone to eternity, so you've been away from Krishna forever. At least in hell you can count 10 billion lifetimes. This is such a radical statement. But I think any devotee who in this room can't say that they'd rather go to hell then go to Brahman. If you're honest. We've all accepted this. Such a high achievement by the mercy of Gaur. Even so many of us have accepted this. He regards material happiness and heavenly plans to be like will-o'-the-wisp. Now, English is my native tongue. And I'm somewhat educated. I didn't know what will-o'-the-wisp meant until today. I knew what it meant functionally, because I'd read it in Prabhupada's books, I could understand what he was trying to say. But I wasn't sure what it meant. I had to actually Google it and look it up in the dictionary. Who knows what will-o'-the-wisp means? Raise your hand. Temporary, right? That's what I understood it to mean. I thought maybe it was like a phantasmagoria, like a will-o'-the-wisp, like some kind of insect that kind of lights up and goes out or something like that. It refers to the haze which sometimes forms over a meadow at night where it looks a little phosphorescent due to natural gases rising up off of the ground, like in a field. So then when you look out over a field at night, you'll see a little haze, kind of a fluorescent, phosphorescent haze, very light. Wisp originally meant hay. And so will-o'-the-wisp, which is like super archaic English from the 17th century, like almost 500-year-old English, that is no longer in usage anywhere I've ever been. I've never seen this term used anywhere. It's probably used in Old English poetry that Prabhupada would have read as part of his education. Prabhupada was like, you know, Prabhupada spoke very much like an Indian. But Prabhupada also had a really cool command, especially of, like, archaic English, poetic English, British English. It's actually humbling for someone who was raised speaking English as my native tongue. And so they regard to be like will-o'-the-wisp, like a haze floating over the field at night where you go to grab it and it's just not there. It doesn't exist, really. The original is Tridashapur Akasha Pushpayate. It makes it into a flower in the sky, into a pushpa in the Akash, which is the Sanskrit equivalent of it makes it into some pie in the sky, something which doesn't exist, a flower in the sky. It makes it like that. What does it make like that? Tridashapur, the city of the 30. The city of the 30 really means the city of the 33, Tridashapur. And so it's the, you know, it's the Ashwins and it's the Adityas and the Vasus, etc. The 33 demigods, which then became the 33 crore demigods. It was originally the 33 in the Vedas. And so they got shortened to Tridashapur. The city of those demigods, for the devotee, it's like just like some, it's nothing. It's Pushpa Akash. It's a flower in the sky. What is it? It's nothing. It's a cloud. It's nothing. The material happiness in the heavenly planets to be like will-o'-the-wisp. It's a, you know, when you translate from one language into another, you get to pick what you want to do. You can go literal, and you can say flower in the sky. But then people might not know what you mean. Like you could say, I'm between a rock and a hard place, is an English idiomatic phrase. If you want to translate that into Spanish, you would say, Entra en la espada y la pared. I entered between the sword and the wall. That doesn't mean anything in English. But functionally, if you want to translate from one language to another, you can either do a literal translation, but people might not understand it, or you can do a functional translation where you come up with the same phrase that they would use. Prabhupada liked to do that. He gave a practical definition you could understand, you could grasp a hold of in another language. So it's will-o'-the-wisp, as opposed to a flower in the sky, but the meaning functionally is the same. As far as the perfection of mystic powers is concerned, a devotee compares it to a venomous snake with no teeth. It says here, Durdanta Indriya Kala Sarpa Patali Protkata Dangstrayate. It uproots the teeth of all the venomous snakes of the serpents of the senses and time that you're trying to control. They're very difficult. Durdanta, they're very difficult to control. And so Prabhupada then extrapolates on this. He says that a mystic yogi is especially concerned with controlling the senses. But because the senses of a devotee are always engaged in the service of the Lord, there is no need for separate control of the senses. And so Prabhupada makes a very powerful point here, which we'll spend a little bit of time on. But I just want to finish this verse first. The verse goes on. Prabhupada doesn't translate the whole verse. The verse says, Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. The mercy of Gaur makes the whole world happy. Vishvam is kind of archaic Sanskrit, Vedic Sanskrit for Sarva. Makes the whole, Vishvam, the whole universe, Purna completely, Sukhayate, it makes it happy. Vidhi Mahendra Adis Cha Kitayate. And it makes the position of Brahman, Shiva, to be like that of an insect. Such is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Jagai Madhai become saved. A million plus people around the world reject impersonal Brahman. They accept the mercy of Gaur. The whole world eventually for them becomes happy and filled with lessons. On a good day, devotees have a mystical ability to take even life's greatest difficulties and see meaning and value in them. And the world becomes happy. The world becomes the embrace of Krishna, Krishna pulling you towards Him. And the devotees would not trade their position, even in this material world, struggling to follow in Lord Chaitanya's footsteps and the Acharya's footsteps. They wouldn't trade it for anything. For heaven, for the position of Indra, for impersonal Brahman. This is the mercy of Gaur. And so Prabodhananda Saraswati is referencing it. Prabhupada very expertly this verse by Prabhupada Saraswati is very much communicating the same point that this verse in the Bhagavatam is communicating. So Prabhupada expertly quotes it. Really expertly quotes it. And then he says, Rishikena Rishikesham Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. This is the Pancharatra's famous definition of bhakti. You serve the master of the senses with the senses. Rishikena Rishikesha. Rishikesh Rishikena. It's very poetic. With your senses to the master of the senses. Sevanam. You serve him. The first half of the verse, Sarvapadi Vinir Muktam Tat Paratvena Nirmalam. You're free of all designations. You're purified. And then with your purified senses, you serve the master of the senses. When we go on the altar, we say, before we go on the altar, we do our Bhuta Shuti. Naham vipro na cha na patir na pina vaisha na shudra. I'm not a Brahman Kshatriya Vaisha Shudra. Brahmachari Grihastha Vanaprastha Sannyas. I'm the servant of the servant of the master of the gopis. Before you go on the altar in this temple, you say this. It's a Bhuta Shuti. You let go of your material body and you take on your spiritual body. Then you step on the altar and you touch the Lord's form of Achanda Chinmaya Rasa. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Did you guys know that? Before we go on the altar, you do Achman and you say a Bhuta Shuti. It's a tantric practice. It goes back to the Agama literature, the Vaishnava tantric literature. And so our standard one is we say this famous verse from Mahaprabhu. And so, Sarvapadi Vinir Muktam. We give up our designations, we purify ourselves, and then with our transcendental senses, we serve the master of the senses. When I was reading this today, I thought it was interesting. This verse is actually the precursor of the famous verse by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That famous verse, Anyabilasita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadi Anavritam, Anukulena Krishnanushilanam Bhakti Uttama. That verse is built on this verse. And Rupa Goswami mirrors this verse, the Prabhupada references. You give up something, Anyabilasita Shunyam, you give up all other desires, Jnana Karmadi Anavritam, it's not covered by Jnana Karma. You have to do some karma, you have to do some service, you have to have some knowledge, you have to know Krishna's God in order to love Him. But it's anavrit, it doesn't cover. Avrit means to cover, anavrit means doesn't cover. It doesn't cover your bhakti. It's what you give up, your tatastha lakshana, the things you give up, your via negativa, your neti neti, and then your via positiva, your swarup lakshana, what you do. Same word, swarup comes up. What you do, what do you do? Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. You serve the master of the senses with the senses. It's very beautiful. And you also Krishnanushilanam. And that's Bhakti Uttama. Amazingly, Rupa Goswami's verse about Bhakti Uttama can be true both in sadhana and in sadhya. You could be a new devotee and you could very carefully practice your bhakti and give up other desires and not let karma and jnana cover your bhakti and anukul in a favorable way, Krishnanushilanam, constantly cultivate devotion towards Krishna. And your bhakti is bhakti uttama. And that's why this definition occurs before the section on sadhana and sadhya bhakti. Sadhana, bhava, and prema bhakti occur afterwards. Because this definition is so perfect that although it sets a very high bar, it is true in the stage of proper sadhana, proper sadhya. Proper sadhana, bhava, and prema bhakti. Similarly, Prabhupada's understanding here, although setting a very high bar, is the standard that we need to come up to. For those who are materially engaged, control of the senses is required. But devotee senses are all engaged in service of the Lord, which means that they're already controlled. We have this show up over and over again in our literature. Akama, Sarvakama, Va, Moksha, Kama, Udardi, Tivrena, Bhakti, Yogena, Yajetu, Purusham, Param. The Bhagavatam's famous verse, whatever your level of desire is, all know, or you want liberation, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You just serve Krishna, Tivra, with Tivra Bhakti, with sharp Bhakti. Strong bhakti. And then there's that other verse. What is it? It's Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ataiva Shant Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakali Ashant. It happens over and over again in our literature. This is kind of a standard theme in our literature. The Krishna Bhakta is Nishkam. He's devoid of desire. Ataivashant. Therefore, he's peaceful. Mukti mukti siddhi kami sakaliyashant. Those who want enjoyment, those who want liberation, or those who want siddhi, some perfection, they're all kami. And sakaliyashant, they're always unpeaceful. Over and over again, our literature beats this drum, resounds this. This verse in the Bhagavatam, it's like a long tradition of this, spanning many millennia. The Prabhupada's purport is so rich. Param drishtva nivartate. A devotee's senses are not attracted by material enjoyment. That's a tough one, to wear that. To say, I'm not attracted by material enjoyment. We may not quite be there yet. We can at least say, I'm not attracted enough to engage in material enjoyment. Or I'm not attracted enough to engage in material enjoyment, which will disturb my bhakti. Or I'm not attracted enough to engage in material enjoyment, which will stop my bhakti. At least I'm going to follow the regular principles, chant my rounds every day, do devotional service. We have to step towards this verse, step by step. And even though the material world is full of misery, fit to be rejected as a shashvat and dukkhalaya, the place of misery, it's temporary. The devotee considers the material world to be also spiritual because everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. The difference between the material world and the spiritual world is the mentality of service. That's the other one that could be worn on a shirt. The difference between the spiritual world and the material world is the mentality of service. What a radical statement. In Western thought, the material world is ex nihilo. It was created from nothing by God. Therefore, the world is mammon. It has no relationship to the Lord. We being monists, we don't oftentimes admit this. We're monists. We're not kevala monists, but we're vishishtadvaitists or achintya-bheda-abheda tattvaists. We believe there's a oneness. We believe everything comes from Krishna. That's jamadi yasya yataha. There's one thing that everything comes from. That makes you a monist. Whether that one thing that everything comes from has variety or not is what makes you into a Vaishnav or an impersonalist. Sometimes we'll contrast a monist to a monotheist, but that, technically speaking, is not the correct comparison. It would be a qualified monist versus an unqualified monist. And so we say the material world is actually the spiritual world. Matter is spirit misunderstood. And that's why the flame from the arti becomes transcendental. That's why the food offered to Krishna becomes prasadam. That's why the devotee's form becomes prasad also. And the real devotee at the time of initiation, his form becomes transcendent. He becomes purified. And we refuse. We think it's like foam on the Ganga. It's not real. Any defect in the body of a devotee, we don't take it seriously. Because everything is ultimately spiritual. The difference between the material world and the spiritual is the mentality of service. It's such a radical statement. Such a powerful statement. And it also comes with it the responsibility to use everything in Krishna's service, which requires an even further purification of the senses, because you have to come in contact with sense objects and not get tempted to enjoy them. It's relatively easy to turn away. That's why this verse in the Gita, Vishaya vini vartante niraharasya dehina. The embodied soul can fast nirahar. But rasa varjam, except for the rasa, that'll remain. Rasa apiyasya, but even the rasa, param drishtva, one who's seen the superior, one who's seen the truth, one who's seen the highest, one who's seen Krishna, nivartate, he turns away. And of course the verse is so beautiful. Mukundam hridi pashata. They're seeing Mukunda within their heart. They're seeing Mukunda within their heart. By the grace of that Vaishnava, Ambrish, they were able to see the Lord within their hearts. And by seeing Krishna, that was the param drishtva. Having seen that Supreme, having seen the Lord, who himself is liberation personified, then what need do I have for something else? It's standing at my doorstep with folded palms, like Bilva Mangal Thakur says. Even before the time of Mahaprabhu, this understanding is there. So many things in our tradition, Mahaprabhu was the first to speak it. Ramananda Roy eventually had to read his own poetry. Some of our understanding of Manjari Bhav goes beyond anything that was ever written before. But this idea has been around since the time of Jayadeva Goswami, Bilva Manga Thakur, from the Bhagavatam all the way up to present. The core of our idea, that we have something which is special enough, we wouldn't trade it in for anything else in the world. Service to Krishna. I didn't quite make it through. I'm almost through. Can I take 2 more minutes? It's right at 9 o'clock. Okay? All right. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Muchate. It's a famous verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Those there, Nirbandha. Or Nirbandha can mean they do it like really strong. And Nirbandha can also mean you're not bound to do it, but by your own desire you're doing it with great perseverance. Krishna Sambandha. They're Nirbandha. They're not attached, but Krishna Sambandha. They attach everything to Krishna. They use everything for Krishna. That is Yukta Vairagya, proper renunciation. But when there's no mentality of service, one's activities are material. Prapanchi kataya bhujya hari sambadhi vastuna mumukshi viparityago vairagyam palgu katyate. It's weak renunciation. It's weak. When you think, bhujya, you think that you have to give up parityaga, like Krishna says, sarva dharma parityaga. So you think, mumukshi bi, you're desiring, mumukshu means it's in the desiderative, it means you're desiring liberation. By those who are desiring liberation, what do? Prityaga, they give up. Well, they give up prapancha, they give up this material world. Why? Because they think it needs to be given up. Even though hari sambandhi vasuna, even though fundamentally this material world, it has some connection to Krishna. This material world has some connection to Krishna, but they don't see it. And therefore they give it up. But they don't realize that everything in this world can be used in Krishna's service. That which is not engaged in the service of the Lord is material, and nothing thus engaged should be given up. That which is not engaged in the service of the Lord is material, and nothing thus engaged should be given up. This is a mistranslation of Prabhupada's original transcript. The editors need to fix this. If you look at the BBT's most recent fixing of this, there might be some things that BBT did posthumously in Prabhupada's books, which is a mistake. This one isn't. Listen to how it sounds in English. That which is not engaged in the service of the Lord is material, and nothing thus engaged should be given up. You can interpret that, what Prabhupada actually said. I called Dravid about this. I want to get the original transcript. They fixed it. That which is engaged in the service of the Lord is not material, and nothing thus engaged should be given up. And so somehow they got it wrong. And it got fixed in the most recent translation. They do this sometimes. They got it a little bit wrong. They flipped a couple words. I was trying to fix this. And I realized, wait a second. This isn't what Prabhupada said. And I went and found the most recent translation. I was reading an earlier version. I found the most recent translation. I found they'd switched it. And I contacted Dravid and I said, hey, send me the OT, which is the original transcript. It's what Prabhupada actually spoke and what he actually was like directly transcribed. Then they fixed it up. And so I wanted to go back to it because I saw they'd fixed it. So he didn't get back to me in time. He wrote back to me and said, oh, I'm traveling, my plane will land in a minute, I'll get back to you. So I'm not 1,000% sure, but I'm almost certain that what's actually said here by Prabhupada is that which is engaged in the service of the Lord is not material, and nothing that's engaged should be given up. They did it a little differently, and it requires you to jump through some hoops, which I was trying to do until I got wise. And so sometimes I make a small mistake, it's no big deal. You can get the original transcript, we go back to. Prabhupada's editors go back and they fix a few little things like this. Maybe they shouldn't fix bigger things, but at least this one they can fix. And then Prabhupada does what he does. He gave a really nice example, and we'll finish with this. In the construction of a high skyscraper and the construction of a temple, there may be the same enthusiasm, but the endeavors are different. For one is material and the other spiritual. Spiritual activities should not be confused with the material activities and given up. Nothing connected with Hari, the Supreme Personality of God, that is material, which ultimately means everything. A devotee who considers all this is always situated in spiritual activities because he can see Krishna everywhere and in everything, because he's Mukundam Hridi Pashita, because he's associating with the personified giver of liberation, because everything in this world becomes a gift from Krishna, becomes a lesson from Krishna, and therefore he doesn't have to turn away from or hate anything or be afraid of anything, because even sickness, illnesses, betrayal, reversals, all that stuff gets understood, it purifies him, and just everything ends up turning you towards Krishna. and the life of a devotee at every moment is blessed, just like the citizens of Ambarisha's kingdom, and therefore he's no longer attracted by material activities. Parandrasa Nivartate. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Panchagoda Prabhu has a question, so I guess we're taking questions.
One question.
Of course, Prabhu. We're taking one question.
We're hearing how the material world is a miserable place, there's no happiness here. But then it describes that one who achieves a transcendental platform experiences unlimited happiness. So if he still could be in the physically seen to be in the material world, but he's experiencing a different kind of happiness. What does it mean that there's no happiness?
I didn't cover this, so thank you for bringing it up. Didactically, it's important at a certain point in your spiritual life for you to develop a little bit of repulsion to the material world. To the extent that you're still lusty and angry and greedy, you have to develop a little repulsion to the material world. And Siddhanta, and pointing out the temporariness of this material world, and the fallacy of the material world, and also time ticking, and taking everything away. And Krishna. What is that verse? Anugrihitam Horishe Tadanam Shanai. When I favor you, I gradually take everything away. Krishna taking stuff away, us getting trained, us developing some repulsion in the material world, it's very important. Just like if you want people to go out and fight in battle, if you join the U.S. military, they'll have you sing songs while you march. I'm marching off to war. If I die, tell my mother I don't regret it. I died in the service of this nation. They say that. They have 18-year-old men repeat this over and over again. They tell you, die to protect your brother. Don't leave him on the battlefield. Pick him up. Carry him off the battlefield. Even you die, don't let your brother lay there unattended to. They train them like this so they can go off and march into battle. And when push comes to shove at that moment, they can be heroic. So didactically, from a teaching perspective, it's incredibly important that we develop some hatred for the material world, that we see through the facade, and that we become a bit repulsed. Ultimately, we need to also realize that nothing is separated from Krishna and be able to engage everything in Krishna's service. And so those two understandings get cultivated side by side in a devotee. Sometimes you meet a new devotee and they're kind of fanatic. They have that utsahamayi. They just learned a couple of verses. They think they know everything. And there's nothing wrong with that. They're a junior. They need to have something very simple to hold on to. Their mind is not big enough to conceive of higher truths. So you just give them something very simple they can hold on to. They can memorize. And when the battle comes. Eventually, we have to become more mature. We have to be able to see sense objects. And the famous verse that Prabhupada just referred to, what is it? It's Anasaktasya Vishayan Yataharan Upayunjata. You engage everything appropriately. Hadi Sam Krishna Sambandhi in Krishna's service, and that's proper. That's the higher level. There's a higher level and a lower level. We cultivate both. Both lessons are important to learn. They only get reconciled when you become a bit more advanced. And then you can appreciate that things, if you want to enjoy them, are bad. Things, if you have some material desire, are bad. But everything becomes using Krishna's service. Just like Prabhupada said, he went to Paris, and he said, this is Paris Ishwar. Prabhupada gave that name to the deity, such a radical name. And he said, so many beautiful women in Paris. And Krishna's come to say, you're all my gopis. And reclaim them all as his gopis. Prabhupada had no difficulty kind of expanding on the beautiful women of Paris, because he had no desire to enjoy them, and he just wanted to come and install the deity of Paris Ishwar, so they could all engage in Krishna's service. And Prabhupada had so many daughters, so many granddaughters, and he was never attracted, never became disturbed, just engaged him in Krishna's service. And so that is the higher level, and we have to cultivate both. If we just do this, we become a little attenuated or hard-hearted. And if we have this other understanding, we cultivate both side by side, then we can really, fly on the wings of eagles. And we can really make advancement. We can really become greatly advanced. Is that okay? Thank you, Prabhu. Should we finish there? We'll finish there. Thank you all very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Jai Shiva Prabhupada.